After 8 years on the market, Super Meat Boy continues to attract new fans and pull old ones back into its breakneck platforming gauntlet. Ports for the PlayStation 4, PS Vita, Xbox One and Nintendo Switch keep its legacy alive, and an upcoming sequel, Super Meat Boy Forever, is hotly anticipated. Created by Edmund McMillan and Tommy Refiners, the title tips its hat to the challenging platformers of old while retaining a slick, modern style. Originally, the game owed much of that style to Danny Baranowski's now classic soundtrack. When developers Team Meat and Danny eventually parted ways, the decision was made to re-score Super Meat Boy for future ports. Something similar had happened with The Binding of Isaac, which saw its Danny B OST replaced by new music from Ridiculon in time for its Rebirth remake. It was then that Ridiculon proved their ability to successfully reimagine a soundtrack using their own sound, without undermining or copying the work that came before. Naturally, when Super Meat Boy needed a melodic respray, Ridiculon were the obvious choice. Consisting of John Evans.
This is John.
And Matthias Bossi.
This is Matthias, can you hear me now?
Ridiculon were joined on the project by David Scatliff, also known as Scattle, and Laura Shigihara. David and Laura each brought a wealth of experience, being known for contributions to Hotline Miami and Plants vs. Zombies respectively. Together, the four assembled a soundtrack of pure meaty splendour, entirely its own and unburdened by the past. The approach left Danny's unique and wonderful work untouched, allowing Ridiculon, David and Laura space for their own expressions. I'm Lee Tyrrell, and this is The Sound Test, where I look in-depth into video game audio and music, along with the very people who crafted it. This week's episode could be considered a second part of sorts to last week's, which features Danny Baranowski's perspective on Super Meat Boy. Yet, Ridiculon, David Scatliff, and Laura Shigihara's work is very much their own. So I spoke to both John Evans and Matthias Bossi for this separate edition. I was unable to get in touch with David or Laura for interviews, but they're high on my wish list for next year's second series. When I previously discussed The Binding of Isaac with John and Matthias, I asked how tied they felt to Danny Baranowski's soundtrack. With this project, was there any extra sense of trepidation? Just how much did Danny's OST impact their own this time around?
We do not feel beholden to history within our video game writing stuff, in terms of that. What Danny did was great, but that was Danny, and we did what we did without thinking of what he did.
Yeah, it would be really awkward to try. I mean, it would feel like plagiarism to try to amalgamate what he had done and do some sort of recognizable slight update to it. So I mean, it would just be uncomfortable and not what we like to do at all.
I can't speak to the relationship between Danny and Tommy and Edmund, but they moved on, and that was the thing that the whole world wanted in 2010, and, you can't escape history. So, and people are creatures of habit, and people love the original game, but for one reason or another, when it came time to reissue the game, the 5th anniversary version, Ed and Tommy wanted something different. And they did. I mean, there was like four of us writing music for that game. It was us and Laura Shigihara and Scattle, and I guess that's three, or John and I. Maybe we're considered one person, but...
We're one.
We are one. Unified. It was interesting in what we wrote, which was incredibly funny and scatterbrained. John played banjo. I mean, he made so many bad and great choices.
Bad choices.
Yeah, that was like a mélange of compositional, we within ourselves wrote a million different styles. And then, of course, you have Laura and Scattle writing too. So it makes for a pretty wild ride, I would say.
Super Meat Boy's 5th anniversary soundtrack may feature four contributing musicians, but only John and Matthias collaborated as Ridiculon. Otherwise, different composers wrote and produced individually. There was a general sense of respect and trust, though, leaving each to make their own interpretations freely.
We were just left to it. We worked independently and... all gave each other sonic high fives over Skype and said, great job, love what you did for such and such a level. But yeah, everyone was left to their own devices. Laura's in California. I think Scattle is in Seattle, and we're here in Massachusetts. So we were never in the same room. That's never possible these days anyway. But we just kind of, John and I think we did about 60%, maybe closer to 75% of that soundtrack, and they put some, Ed and Tommy had very specific ideas that those two could lend their vast talents to for particular levels. And they just, put us through our paces on the majority of the game there.
The majority of the soundtrack is the work of Ridiculon, but David Scatliff handled the hospital and salt factory levels, while Laura Shigihara was given the task of scoring The Cotton Alley, the game's final chapter. David's tracks have an EDM-inspired sound, complete with digital beats and dueling synths. When The Last World sees you take control of Bandage Girl, Laura accentuated the twist with plucky, J-pop-esque melodies.
Those guys do things that we could absolutely never do. They have different brains and different aesthetics, and there was great reason for them scoring the levels that they did. And that's, of course, why Tommy and Edmund chose them for those scenes, because they're like, man, those Ridiculon guys could not go there. They would be useless under those circumstances. Call Scattle or call Laura.
Ridiculon's style is hard to pin down definitively, but they tend toward rock and metal influences. It doesn't get much of an outing in Super Meat Boy, but they've also been known to stitch together some particularly gorgeous ambient soundscapes. Since the development team had clear enough ideas to involve David Scatliff and Laura Shigihara on their own merits, to what degree were Ridiculon steered in their direction for Super Meat Boy?
I think Ed and Tommy had some opinions, especially in like our goofy forest worlds. They kept sending us like super redneck country music, which is, they're like, yeah, is there any way that we can have more banjos and things in this level? And
the answer was yes.
There's always room for more banjo. It's the same story with every game. Those guys have opinions. They say what they feel like the level should sound like. And without being too dictatorial, they let us go down the rabbit hole in terms of trying to make their dreams come true, trying to realize their vision, their sort of unspoken vision, and we do our best. But man, and that, I guess that turned out to be lots of banjo music.
The game's opening world, The Forest, uses banjo in all of its tracks. It's an oddly perfect fit for your first meaty leaps too, as it jangles its way alongside southern slide guitars and skittish drums. Certain instruments rarely sound good synthesized, and banjo is among them. That's probably why it doesn't show up too often in VGM, but Ridiculon sacrificed John's own fingers for the cause of authenticity.
Do not underestimate John's capability. That is not MIDI banjo, people.
No.
That is real. Oh, actually, you know, did Ben Kushigian play banjo on some of that stuff? I think he did on some of the really, really fast stuff. And then he played some like real tremolo. Hey, shout out to Ben Kushigian.
Yeah, Ben Kushigian, that's
math
right.
Math genius and total shredder.
Yeah.
The extra, you know, 400 beats per minute banjo stuff was real and was played by our friend Ben Kushigian. I know, it's no joke, man. You need balls of steel to play that fast and that confident. And you need to, I mean, it's hard to emote on the banjo, you know? It's just like it's ploinky, but Ben can do it.
After The Forest, Super Meat Boy moves away from banjos into more outright metal guitars via the electronic pulse of David Scatliff. It feels well established and confident, the natural result of a game that was already celebrating its fifth anniversary. Obviously, most VGM is composed as a part of general development, using early level builds and concept art as a guide. In this case, Super Meat Boy was available for Ridiculon to play in its entirety. In what ways did that change John and Matthias' production process?
It gave Ed and Tommy a clearer idea of the aesthetic that they, the direction that they wanted to go towards in terms of music. I think that's why they were able to break it up between the three composers and say, you guys are great at this, do this, do this, 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 and this, and this. Whereas something like The End Is Nigh, the development process is like till the bitter end, you know, with cutscenes and things like that. And, you know, often, you know, late in the game, Ed will come back and say, oh God, such and such a tune is just not working right now. Like, it's been in this current build of the game and we thought it was working and now it's not. You need to do this level over again. You know, Meat Boy was basically, you know, as you said, it was a game. The soundtrack just changed. And so we had an opportunity to, you know, just basically repaint an already moving 18-wheeler on the highway. We did a respray. We did a wrap job. We didn't play the game at all during development. We, you know, we go level by level and try and keep the map of the game in our minds and also keep the Skype lines of communication open, because oftentimes something will be tried out and it will be absolutely a horrible thing and not the answer. And Ed never has qualms about saying, boy, that stunk.
Once the right style is determined, next comes melody and rhythm. For platformers, both have to be strong to help support the gameplay. Rhythm sets the pace, but melody dictates the tone. Not only that, but a level's actual tune has to feature another quality. In a title like Super Meat Boy, you're going to die. A lot. That means the backing track will likely repeat several times. So, by design, good VGM is written to take advantage of that. How do Ridiculon play to the inherently repetitive nature of the medium and stop things getting too dull?
It depends on what style of Ridiculon you're listening to. In the case of the over-the-top, more metal-y things, high-tempo ones, we are willing you along with the tempo and the sheer exuberance and over-the-top playing and things flying at you from all speakers. Maybe we're just like forcing you to sit there and listen, and we're just trying to match the intensity of the game, and you know, even though it's looping back on you every 2 minutes, you still feel like you're just accelerating wildly, you know, further and further and further.
And I also think we try our best on, especially on the more dense tracks, to have a fair amount of little sonic anomalies that are happening throughout the piece of music. Just little bits. It might be explosions. It might be just a harmonic moment or a different rhythmic shift that happens for a bar here and a bar there. That might not be the focal point. They might not be as loud as the melody or the kick drum or the snare drum, but they're all in there, kind of in the mid-range volume levels, and they're things that aren't immediately apparent to you, but on continued listens over and over again, you might hone in on a different little thing in there that isn't. You know, it's not so loud that it's obvious every time, but it's in there, and you might hone in on it, you know, a few times through the loop, and like, oh, there's that little thing in there that I didn't hear last time, and then the next time through, you might just ignore that and hear this other little sound that's buried in there. So we try to bury in a fair amount of sounds and different, you know, elements and moments to keep people's interest, even though the main melodies and chords and rhythms of the song that are just going along don't change, and obviously none of it can change, but you will, because of the fact that they are in there at that kind of mid-level volume-wise, you might pick up on them, even if it's just subliminally.
Melodies are often stretched out over whole chapters, not just separate levels. In Super Meat Boy, a chapter consists of light world levels, dark world levels, retro throwbacks, and different menus for each. Every chapter riffs on a central theme throughout, which is integral to building a location's character. Ridiculon, David Scatliff, and Laura Shigihara all had to work with conscious threads in their chapters, and they could be communicated through more than mere melody.
It's like writing a film score, you know, in terms of just keeping your eye on the prize and developing a leitmotif or a theme that is memorable and that can be recycled and repurposed, and
it's all in there. It's a matter of starting with that iconic a melody or something that will be recognizable, and then either stripping it down and revoicing it and doing different instrumentation to give it a different, simpler feeling, or adding more and more to it based on those general motifs that you've started from the simple version to turn into the dark world.
The starkest rearrangements of Super Meat Boy are heard in its retro-themed Warp Zones. Their soundtracks emulate 80s chiptune, but otherwise play through a chapter's main motif faithfully. It's strangely satisfying when music is given that old-school flavour, even if the treatment's applied to 19th century classical. Ridiculon did just that for The End Is Nigh, and in their previous episode in this series, John, Matthias and I discussed their mythical Ruiner machine, which they used to evoke bugs in that title's glitch carts. Did Ridiculon's Ruiners come into play for Super Meat Boy's distinct nostalgia trips?
The Ruiners always come into play.
It's always turned on.
The Ruining Machine is always turned on. We won't tell you where it's located in the studio, but in the case of those retro tracks, I should say that was when we first turned the Ruiner Machine on, and we've since added to it. So, you know, certainly our ability to ruin things has greatly increased as we've gained more confidence with, you know, The End Is Nigh, things like that. Those were the early ruining days of Ridiculon. So thanks to Ed and Tommy for letting us turn on the Ruiner for that game. Yeah, we'd have to have conversion therapy or something in order to turn off the Ruining Machine. It's always on.
Thanks to John and Matthias for speaking to me for the sound test. Across their three episodes in this series, Ridiculon show their VGM pedigree, and it was a pleasure to spotlight their work. Along with David Scatliff and Laura Shigihara, the four composed awesome work that deserves its own accolades, not least for stepping into new territory instead of on anyone's toes. I'm incredibly grateful you've checked out this podcast, and with only one episode to go in the series, I hope you've enjoyed it. Next week, we'll be finishing up with one last appearance from Grant Kirkhope. Together, we come right up to date with a focused look at Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle and its grand orchestral score. If you'd like to hear that episode now, ahead of its official release, head on over to patreon.com/_secretcave to pledge your support for a single dollar. Of course, this doesn't apply if you're already a patron and hearing this episode in advance. All pledges go towards hosting this show across multiple platforms and will help improve the quality and frequency of my future output. In 2019, I will be looking to produce a second series of The Sound Test. But, in the interim, you can catch me getting back into the world of streaming. I also have plans to broadcast live VGM radio before the year is out, so check the description for links if you'd like to stay up to date.